Let's kick off with some of today's biggest stories. I'm going to chat now with Chris Justham, who is a relationship manager at Seven Investment Management. So good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon, Ed.
So let's kick off with Lloyds Bank. £4.2 billion in pre-tax profit, best since the financial crisis, and they're paying a special dividend as well. So is Lloyds firmly on the recovery track now, Chris?
It would seem so. Certainly a strong contrast to what we've seen in RBS over recent weeks and months, even, who have consistently seemed to be seeing difficulties. And the reason we draw a tangent between the two is obviously because these are the two banks which needed government assistance. So Lloyds doubling their profits is a huge tick in the box. There's also been a decline in PPI costs, so the mis-selling really had hit them in previous years. And the total compensation there has been $17 billion. So it's understandable that the profits have really taken a hit there. Conduct charges did tick up slightly in comparison to the previous year, which they won't be overly pleased about, but they're starting to put those big legacy issues in their rearview mirror, which enables them to look forward. And they've actually mentioned the CEO saying that, look, our business doesn't seem to be affected so far where our customers are concerned, being concerned about the referendum and what have you. And with interest rates going up, we're expecting revenues to tick up as well. So they are looking particularly healthy, as reflected in the increased dividend.
Yeah, share price up about 4% at 69p. We'll actually come back to this story in about a quarter of an hour, but chat to Chris Bailey of Financial Orbit to get his view on the story. But with you now, Chris Justham from Seven Investment Management, let's go on to these UK GDP figures. GDP growth for the last quarter of 2016 just edged up. It's been revised up from 0.6%. That was the initial reading. Now they're saying it grew 0.7%. What's your take on these numbers, Chris?
Well, I think where you look at quarterly growth, the upgradings or downward revisions happen really regularly. So what we often happen is we see a flash number, or we have a craving for data, obviously, where the market's concerned. So we're desperate to find out what's going on. And then in reality, what they then have to go and do is do their due diligence and understand exactly where the numbers have come from. So it is an upgrade from the Q4's point of view, but it's annual growth, I think, that we're looking at more, which the fact that in 2016, it's 1.8% growth versus 2%. So we lose the tag of best performing advanced world economy, which we had just ahead of Germany, who have 1.9%. So we're into second place, but it isn't too significant. It's more one of these fluctuations you see on a quarter-by-quarter basis.
So we're not seeing any major impact from the referendum yet in these figures anyway.
No, and I think that where GDP is concerned, the referendum and what does happen and what the UK looks like over the next 6 to 12 months, 24 months and what have you, isn't going to feed immediately into those GDP figures. And despite what we saw from a number of the forecasters who have consistently had to come back and change what they're forecasting from a growth point of view, over the short term, it doesn't seem to have fed through yet. We're still looking to see what that might look like in the next year.
Okay, well, sticking with Brexit, the FT's got a story today about the credit rating agencies for businesses and bonds. That's people like Fitch and S&P. And those agencies in London are currently regulated by an organisation called ESMA, which is a European regulator. And clearly, assuming we do leave the EU, ESMA can no longer regulate these London-based businesses. And the FT says that no UK body wants to pick up the mantle, obvious candidates include the FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, or Bank of England. They don't want to regulate this sector post-Brexit. Is this a major problem, Chris?
I think so, because people do rely on this both for the ratings of countries and for companies. So for people listening, these rating agencies ultimately give people guidance as to their credit worthiness when you're looking at a country or if you're looking at a company, when you're considering whether or not to lend them money, essentially. So it does give guidance. What I would say is they haven't crowned themselves in glory in recent years, which is perhaps why people aren't falling over themselves to regulate that particular area, because it must have been an incredibly difficult one to do. And there were big question marks over whether there were vested interests in the run-up to the financial crisis in terms of ratings, as well as the fact that they did misprice, if you like, the risk of derivatives, which exacerbated the whole financial crisis as it was as well. So you can understand why people aren't falling over themselves, but someone's got to pick up the mantle, and it's just another example, I suppose, of how we aren't completely prepared at the moment for what post-Europe life looks like. One would assume, though, that supervision would initially rest with the FCA. We'll have to find out.
And it's yet another thing that's, as I understand it, it's going to be tough to sort this out within the 2-year time frame. Yet another thing that's going to be a struggle to get done in time. And sticking with Brexit's potential impact on the city, The Guardian have a big story. They're saying that Brexit could damage financial stability in the UK, but also in Europe. And this whole issue of sort of unpicking little ecosystems, financial ecosystems, one particular part of the financial world depends on another particular part of the financial world. And if one bit moves to Europe, it can create all sorts of consequences that perhaps not many people have spotted yet. That's what The Guardian's saying. Do you think there's something in this, Chris?
I think it was quite a sensationalist piece, and it's quite easy to pick up that stick, if you like, and run with it. But what they're pointing out is common sense to a degree. The City of London in particular has taken decades and decades to build, and those ecosystems, to borrow the phrase you mentioned, have been developed over time. So it's natural that if we do leave the single market, for example, and we have to live underneath equivalence rules or WTO, so World Trade Organization rules, that there will likely be some of these businesses who are going to have to relocate or focus their areas in the continent rather than here. And if they do that, they're going to have to also unpick many of their, if you like, reliances on other business units and unwind a number of peripheral areas which do support that ecosystem that The Guardian have specifically mentioned. So it's inevitable that there's going to be an element of turbulence when we find out what a lot of those large organisations do, but they're going to have to start planning sooner rather than later. So it's not really any more news. It's kind of pointing out the obvious, albeit in quite a sensationalist fashion, I'd suggest.
Okay, well then there's the euro, which is at its lowest level in 6 weeks, have been falling especially against the dollar. So this morning it's down, actually it's down 0.33% against the dollar, actually up a tiny bit against the pound. But nonetheless, big picture is it's been falling its lowest level in 6 weeks. Why is that, Chris? Is it all to do with the looming elections in France, Germany and the Netherlands?
I think politics does come into it, but I think the point you made, which is that it slips against the dollar but not against the pound, is probably the best example of what's happened, which is as it's a fiat currency, so in English, it's not backed by any physical commodity. So this isn't the gold standard where we can say that the euro has slipped against something physical. It slipped against a comparative currency. So in this case, the dollar. So this is more about dollar strength, I think, than euro weakness. And what we have seen in recent weeks and with the FOMC committee in the US with Janet Yellen and a number of the other Fed representatives is the fact that they've been talking up interest rate rises again. And interest rate rises mean a stronger dollar. So as that does tick up, it does mean comparative weakness in this case against the dollar for the euro. So whilst the political situation does remain looming, if you like, on the horizon, in this case, I think it is a bit more about dollar strength.
Okay, well, I've read some pundits and commentators talking about saying that we could see parity between the dollar and the euro. That could be a good trade for 2017. I just wonder if so many people are saying that, that there might be not many sellers of the euro left and we could actually see something unexpected happen and the euro pick up steam at some point in the next few months. Do you think that's a plausible outcome?
I think it's a fair point, and it depends if you're looking purely against the dollar or against a basket of currencies. And once we do swallow, if you like, in Europe, a lot of the events that we've got on the horizon, whether that's the German election, we've got Marine Le Pen in France, we don't quite know what might happen with a lot of those unexpected events, if you like, that are coming up. And once perhaps we get an outcome, whether or not it is the expected outcome or the unexpected outcome, we can then start to get some kind of clarity and see where the euro is going to sit, as it is likely to bubble over that period of time.
We've got another key meeting happening around the Greek debt crisis today. So Angela Merkel, sort of effectively representing the EU, is meeting Christine Lagarde of the IMF. What are they going to be talking about with reference to Greece?
Well, I think this is just another case of perhaps kicking the can down the road. What's interesting about Greece was about 2 years ago, we were talking on the show about the fact that that was the looming crisis for the European Union, and that was the biggest problem, if you like, that was going to face it, and the fact that Germany in particular didn't necessarily want to foot the bill or give a haircut to Greek debt. But all that's happened each time is there's been a renegotiation of what Greece owes, because no one really wants to address the core problem. And I don't think we're going to see much difference to that in this occasion, particularly given all the things that are going on in the Eurozone at the moment. What I would say is that Angela Merkel also has got to take into consideration her voters back at home, as there is a general election coming up.
Yeah, and just quickly sticking with Germany, I'm seeing that German business confidence is at a four-year high, despite economists predicting a fall. So why is German confidence so high, do you think?
Manufacturers in particular have done particularly well. They're feeling very positive. Construction slightly hit by poor February weather. German private sector PMI, though, was looking particularly good. So that's at a four-year high as well. So generally speaking, inflation's just starting to tick through in Germany, and confidence seems to be up despite a lot of those political things on the horizon.
Chris Justin from Seven Investment Management, good to chat to you again.